This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/recommend today.
Tony Gwynn Jr.
This goes in the category of all money ain't good money.
Check. Chris Ello.
Sorry, Chad. Thank you. Call
Chad, thanks for jumping in, though, buddy.
Check. Kylie the dog. Check.
It's time for us to dive headfirst into the top sports stories of the day. Gwen and Chris are on the air on 97.3 The Fan.
.5 on the dot. Tony Gwynn Jr., Chris Ello. 2 hours in, 2 hours to go. Before we get into this segment, we do have to finish our Big Five, and we have one last question. Scraby.
We do. And as I was trying to say earlier, Lakers guard Danny Green was on the Ringer's NBA show with Raja Bell and Logan Murdoch, and they asked him about what he feels, how he feels about the season potentially starting on December 22nd, and here is what he told them.
Let me ask you, Danny, because this is going to be, I mean, the bubble was a unique situation, like, but now you're going to have to run it back. And they're talking about, you know, condensing all of this and trying to have that December 22nd start date. What are you, you know, in, like, where are you at mentally? Like, you guys are just coming off of it, but like,
yeah,
real talk,
I'm right.
Like, so
December 22nd is not even mine. I think most guys, if they said we start in December, I think they're like, I'm not going to be there. If I had to guess, because we have a lot of vets on our team. It's not like we have a bunch of young guys and rookies. We probably have like three or four young guys or rookies. We're fortunate enough to bring the same team back. We have Doe, who's on year 15, Dwight's in year 16, Bron year 18, you know, 17, DeVell. And these guys, we just played a whole season. Bron's been in the finals 10 years out of his 17 years, which is unbelievable mentally. You know, it's draining to do that. And to have that quick of a restart, I wouldn't expect to see him there. I wouldn't expect to see him probably for the first month of the season.
You heard him. You wouldn't expect to see LeBron for the first month of the season. And Chris, you're up first. How's the NBA going to handle load management in 2021?
I'm not sure how they're going to handle it, but they better handle it because it's going to happen. I think, you know, we can talk to Tony about this and his Lakers, but they're going to have a 72-game regular season, which is what they're talking about, or last I read anyway. I would say that if I was LeBron and I was, you know, some of the older version of the Lakers, I'd take about the first 25 games off. They'd probably luck into a couple of wins along the way. And they'd be, let's say, 3-22. And then LeBron could start playing and Anthony Davis could start playing. And the way they set things up in the NBA, the Lakers would still make the playoffs and they'd still be favored to win the NBA title when they get around to it next year. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a ton of it and the league's going to just have to deal with it. I mean, these are, you know, crazy circumstances for everybody in all walks of life. But your body can only do as much as your body can do. And I got to believe that you know, you don't want to just talk about LeBron only, but Dwight Howard, the rest of these guys, they're going to definitely need some time off, and Frank Vogel will have to be very careful how he works his guys in.
Isn't it kind of crazy that LeBron's career is able to vote now if he's at 18 years? That's
oh,
nuts.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, that's a great segue there, Scraby.
I thought so. Yeah. Thank you. Tony, what do you think about this? How are they going to deal with load management in 2021?
Yeah, I don't know. I think some of what Denny Green was saying, he was joking, but some of it's going to be very, very real. Like, starting the season in December when it literally just ended, beginning of this month it ended? To then turn around and start a season, that's about half of the time that they normally get off. And I get that they got a whole bunch of time off in March, but they still were in a bubble for almost 3 months after that. And that's going to be a tough turnaround, especially for the teams that played deep into the playoffs. And the Lakers will be one. I don't know how they're going to handle it. I'm sure that is part of the reason why some owners were pushing back on starting the season in December and maybe pushing it another month closer to Martin Luther King Day. But therein lies the problem. Eventually, you want to get back on your regular schedule where you're starting in October, ending in June. That's going to be tough to do unless they either shorten the season more than they already have talked about, or they have to start the season when they're talking about, and they're going to just have to deal with load management. And they're going to have to deal with it because, remember, they started putting in new rules about load management. They're going to have to probably break some of those rules in order to get the guys the sufficient rest they needed, because ultimately it's about the product on the court. And if the product on the court isn't good, what do you really have?
All right. We finished up the Big Five.
Boom. Big Five expanded through two segments, unfortunately.
My fault.
Depends on how you look at it. I mean, you
poorly orchestrated by the host of the Big Five.
Yes, it was. I'll take the fall.
It was definitely poorly orchestrated.
Poorly orchestrated.
What are we talking about? The O-Lod? The D-Lod?
Shut up. That's a dumb question.
We do have a game six tonight. Dodgers, Rays. A lot of questions, Chris, on who could possibly be the MVP. We talked a little bit about it earlier, about the guys that have an opportunity. Of course, on the Rays side, you got Randy Arozarena. He's one of the guys who's in the mix for this. Brandon Lau's got to be in the mix. He's been a big reason why they have had the success they've had. You can pick maybe one or two bullpen arms out of that group. And then on the Dodgers side, Chris, you got Kershaw, who's had a kind of a redemption, so to speak, in this playoffs. You've also had Corey Seager, who's been hot the entire playoffs. And of course, Justin Turner has also been there. Max Muncy is leading the team in on-base percentage at like 4-something. So there's a lot of choices to pick from if the Dodgers win or if the Rays win.
Well, I know that my partner, that being you, picked the Dodgers in six and picked Kershaw as the MVP. So that would be very impressive if it turns out that way.
It would.
I certainly think Kershaw deserves quite a bit of attention. But I know that the late Bob Gibson would be laughing at the notion of a starting pitcher pitching two games and throwing a total of 11 innings in those two games, even being considered for MVP when back in, you know, it's a different era, but Gibson used to pitch all 9 innings of 3 games in a World Series, and he didn't mess around, and none of those guys did until about 20 years ago. But it's a different era now. Kershaw certainly deserving. It's too hard to answer the question because I think who was the hero tonight, if the Dodgers win, is going to, you know, get a lot of extra votes because it's so close. Justin Turner's got 6 extra base hits in this World Series. He had the home run to start Game 3, had the home run to start Game 4. He's got 4 doubles. Corey Seager has just carried it over, as you said, from the playoffs right into the World Series. Muncy's been on base. It's almost impossible to believe the Dodgers haven't won already. You know, yeah. I mean, with a 2-3-4 of Seager, Turner, and Muncy all pretty much on base every single time up, and then batting around those guys, you got Mookie Betts and Will Smith and Bellinger and all the rest. I mean, how have the Dodgers not won yet? But, and I think on Tampa Bay, I think Brandon Lau would have to be the leading candidate right now just because he had the biggest hits in both of their wins. You know, the game two, he hit the 2 home runs. And then game 4, he had the 3-run homer, which, you know, they aren't coming back and winning that game if he doesn't hit that 3-run homer and turn the game around. So I think Lau, Arozarena would have to be the guy because of the entire playoffs. But I think it's a fun one this year. It's kind of a fun MVP discussion. And But I do think it's still wide open. And, you know, whoever has a big hit, I mean, if Turner hits another home run tonight, then he's probably going to get it if the Dodgers win. If Seager hits another home run, he'll probably get it if the Dodgers win. If neither of them do anything, then maybe Kershaw can sneak in there and get it. And I think if Kershaw gets it, I'm not going to say it because if I say anything positive
about
Clayton Kershaw raked over the coals by the Padre Twitterverse, but, you know, I think if Kershaw gets it, I think some of it would be kind of a career vote because I think 11 and two-thirds innings is just not enough, even though he won two games. The bullpens have been so crucial in these in this World Series that it's hard to for me to give it to a starting pitcher. I mean, I still have a little old school left in me, and I'd like to see a starting pitcher go seven innings one time. And it's not Kershaw's fault that he doesn't go seven innings. It's just the way the game's played now.
You still on this seven inning thing, man?
You know, I'm on nine innings once in a while. You know, I mean, if a guy's pitching lights out, what are you taking him out for? I mean, I criticize both of these managers for doing that throughout this series. You know, again, I'm going to lean on something John Smoltz said, and he said it during the Padres series against the Dodgers. But when you go with a bullpen day, and I know that, you know, that's what's going to happen a lot tonight and tomorrow if it gets that far, it only takes one guy to have an off night to mess up the entire game. You know, you could have six guys all pitch well, and one guy just doesn't have his best stuff, and you could cough up two or three runs right there and lose a ball game. It's hard to have your best stuff and be pitching well and be feeling good. And unless Dave Roberts was clearly thinking, I got to get Dustin May out of this game right here because I might need him for game six. Like, I didn't see any reason to take him out of game five. I mean, he could have finished that game the way he was pitching. But these guys just have to go to the bullpen. It's like a nervous tick they can't get rid of right now. Every time somebody gets on base, these managers have to come jumping out of the dugout and make a pitching change. And I long for the days when pitchers were allowed to get into a jam and work themselves out of it once in a while. And I know I'm old, and that's just who I am. Can I tell you?
You guys, a lot of our guys like jump back and forth on this whole either jumping in all the way with this new way or like straddling the fence. You're a fence straddler on this one because in the Padres series, I swear you were all about the new age, and now we got to this point and you're tired of watching both umpires, both managers pull their guys out and bring new guys in. I'll say this at the very least, I Kevin Cash has been the same Kevin Cash he's been all season long. He's been that same. He's managed this way all year. He hasn't veered from it. I think Dave Roberts is just taking a different approach because for so long he's had to stick with guys longer, it seems like, than maybe he should, and it's burned him. It seemed like more than a few times, and it just seems like he's gonna put it in guys that he is comfortable with moving forward. And so far, it has definitely worked. I think we have a caller on the line. Todd, welcome to Gwen and Chris. How you doing? Floor is yours.
Hey, fellas, just had a quick question. You're talking about World Series MVPs. Who gets to decide, and I guess how? But my main question is, who gets to decide who's the World Series MVP?
Chris, you probably got a better answer than I do. And who?
Yeah, I think it's a media vote. Okay. Although it could be a little different this year because, you know, the games and the media attendance is a little bit different. But usually everybody in the media who's covering the whole World Series gets a ballot and turns it in, and or either that or the Baseball Writers Association, those, you know, media members. But I've always felt it's a media vote. That's what I remember it being, and I think it's still the same way.
Hope that answers your question, Todd. But yeah, I listen, I think you do. You, Chris, you are right about one thing. In some cases, you would like to see guys get an opportunity to finish the inning. But as I said, that is just the way this game is played now.
Yeah.
And
I got to get used to it. And as a matter of fact, here comes Dave Roberts now. Looks like Tony Gonsolin is going to get taken out of the game in the first inning. He just gave up a home run to a Rosarena and a single. So it might be time to get him out of the game. By the way, I just said home run, a Rosarena. Yes, he's hit another one. I mean, it's unbelievable. That's 10 postseason home runs. He's broken the record by two, and he's given Tampa Bay an early lead. But, yeah, I would like to see guys be able to pitch in and out of jams a little bit. But I guess managers get criticized more for leaving a guy in too long than they do for bringing a new guy in.
I think you pointed that out. Like, you're going to have to hear that the next day of why you let so-and-so pitch longer when you could have gone to the bullpen.
Yeah. Certainly I went to the bullpen. You can't get mad at me for that.
Certainly not the way you want to be possibly, you know, making decisions. But can't lie that a lot of managers are making decisions like that. All right, let's step away, take a break. When we come back, we got some more sports. Talk about this Mookie Betts. He said he thought he was going to be a Red Sox for life. We'll get into that a little bit. Plus, some more sports on the way. This is Gwen and Chris Sandiego's number.
Well, you got guys like Babe Ruth, Mickey Mantle, Reggie Jackson, Albert Pujols. Got to put the name Randy Arozarena on that list now. Are you kidding me?
Nope, can't put him on the list. Played too many games. They got too many rounds now. He can.
Yeah, right. It doesn't count. He's hit 10 home runs this postseason. Nobody's ever hit more than 8, including Corey Seager, who has 8 coming into the game tonight. He's got 3 home runs in a World Series. Yeah, Scraby brought that up. Welcome back to Gwen and Chris. 5:21 is the time. Crisello, Tony Gwynn Jr. And whether or not Arozarena's, you know, record is a record, and to me the answer to that, Tony, is of course it's a record. Yeah. They've been having, you know, multiple layers and rounds of playoffs now for, I don't know, almost 20 years, 25 years. Nobody's ever hit more than home runs in one playoff series than him. So he's got the record, and if you want to have a World Series-only record for the old-time guys, you have that. In fact, Scraby asked it in the Chris versus the Fans today, who has the record for most World Series home runs, and that's still Mickey Mantle. That hasn't changed. But when you talk about one playoff series, what this guy's done, 10 home runs, what do you have, only about 10 in his career coming into this postseason series, something like that.
Right.
So you got to give the guy some credit where it's due. And, you know, there's room in the record books for all kinds of little different deals. And I think Arozarena is definitely a record holder for sure. I wouldn't put – there's no asterisks involved at all.
Yep, no, I agree. This is a no-brainer. People just like to have arguments about everything nowadays. And this one is a non-argument. He's earned the right to be on that list, and he's going to be there for a while. I don't see anybody having this type of – and I could be wrong, but it did take about 20-something years before we had somebody new on the list. So,
yeah. I mean, I remember when Barry Bonds had the postseason, I think it was 2002, when he hit 8 home runs, and I thought, man, this is the most incredible thing I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Of course, he did it on 8 pitches. Because every other pitch they threw to him was outside the strike zone. But, you know, when he did that for the Giants, I mean, I thought I'll never see anything like it. And then a few years later, Carlos Beltran got on a hot streak for, I think it was the Astros, and he hit 8 home runs. And I thought, man, this is really impressive. And I never changed, you know, my mind on the fact, you know, Pujols has hit 5 in a World Series. I think Reggie Jackson's hit 5 in a World Series. So those guys hold that record, but there's a different record now. And
I hope that you guys are watching the game right now. This is something that, as a ball player, other ball players will see and laugh at. Wendell, the third baseman for Tampa, just swung at a pitch that was really inside. And just to show, it is very hard to foul a ball off of your back thigh. He didn't just foul it off his back thigh. He fouled it off both inner thighs, which is almost impossible. When you see a swing like that, it just brings out chuckles because we've all been there at some point.
Oh, yeah.
No, I've never been there. I honestly haven't. I've never gotten my bat so far out in front of a pitch that I could pull it foul into my own body.
I mean, this ball was so far inside. It wasn't even that he got his bat out. It just jammed him so bad, it hit both inner thighs. You know how
that foul ball, he almost hit that ball off of his cup. if I can say that on live radio.
That is so hard to do. Yeah. That's seeing it deep right there. You let it travel on that one.
That is, yeah, that's something I never had to worry about. Chris Ella, Tony Gwynn Jr., it is 1-0 Tampa Bay on the Rosarena home run. And we'll keep you up to date on, excuse me, Game 6 of the World Series. Some other things.
Gosman wiggled out of that little jam there, rehearsing second, got out of that.
And by the way, just to underscore my point, there was action in the Dodger bullpen in the top of the first inning, just in case.
And maybe Dave is thinking the same way you are. Like, we don't want to get to a Game 7. There's going to be quick triggers today on pitchers. If you are having issues, you are not getting a shot to get out of those issues, unless it's the first inning like it was for Gosman.
Yeah, I think had he given up another hit there and gone behind 2-0, or because there was a couple of guys on after the home run, I could have seen Dave Roberts hop out of that dugout real quick. This hour, by the way, is brought to you by your San Diego BMW centers. Through November 2nd, lease a 2020 BMW 330i sedan for $399 a month for 36 months with $4,124 due at signing. Contact a San Diego County BMW center today for details, or visit sdcountybmw.com. Yeah, I mean, you know, talking about the record thing just again real quick, Tony, I mean, look at Kershaw in this postseason. He's 4-1 in the postseason. Well, back, you know, in the day-day, you couldn't have five decisions in one postseason because you only pitched in a World Series, and guys like Gibson would win three games in a World Series. I think Mickey Lolich one time won three games in a World Series, a couple of other guys. But, you know, Kershaw's got four wins this postseason, so, you know, that's probably a record somewhere along the line. But everything's different now, and you're right. I don't like to be called a fence straddler, but there's a lot of things in baseball with the way the game is played that I guess I just can't help myself.
Yeah, that's true.
I want to jump all the way over to one side and just accept everything the way it is now, but part of my old school brings me back and says, hey, let a pitcher pitch out of a jam. But at the same time, did you see this the other night, Tony? The Dodgers sacrifice bunted, and I think it was Barnes. It was a safety squeeze, and
safety
he got the
squeeze.
Run in.
Yeah.
It was the third sacrifice bunt of the entire postseason.
Yeah.
Not by the Dodgers, not in the World Series. By every team in every game that's been played this postseason, there's only been three sacrifice bunts. The sacrifice is clearly dead.
Yeah, it's not a surprise only because I actually heard, I can't remember who was on, I was listening to somebody talk about it. It was one of the managers, and they were asking, like, there's only been, I think at that time, there had only been one in the entire postseason.
Right.
And, you know, it was just a question they were asking the manager about, and he was like, you know what, teams just aren't willing to go there. He said a lot of times, and plus, teams don't really practice it all year. So you're not practice it, and all of a sudden pull it out in a World Series is just not likely.
No, that was clear in a couple innings later because Kike Hernandez tried to lay down a sacrifice bunt, and he bunted a ball over his head and popped out to the third baseman. So, anyway. But, yeah, it's funny, too, because I talk about the overmanaging, and then when it comes to bunting, nobody manages when it comes to bunting because nobody wants to lay down a sacrifice bunt, so that sign doesn't exist anymore. 1-0 Tampa Bay. We'll keep you up to date, as mentioned. Coming up on the program, we're going to have an interesting countdown, I think. At least it was something that interested me. Tony's kind of going along with it because I'm dragging him into it. top five factoids from 1988, which is the last time the Dodgers won a World Series. Yes, we're going to turn back time and do that here in just a sec, but it's been a long, long time, obviously, since the Dodgers have won a World Series, and they haven't won this one yet, that's for sure, as Tampa Bay will try to keep it alive here and get this Game 6 win tonight. Stream your favorite fan talk show on your smarter. Just ask Alexa to play 97.3 The Fan. Powered by Dell Technologies, call 877-ASK-DELL. All right, we'll take a quick timeout, come back with that countdown and more. Gwynn and Chris rolling along on this Tuesday evening. Glad you're with us. Thanks for joining us on San Diego's number one sports talk station, 97.3 The Fan.
Gwen and Chris like to rank things. Not college rankings, not athlete rankings.
So what's your point?
But their own rankings. And these rankings can be very serious.
Top five ways that we like potatoes.
Top five pizzas.
Top five ways to beat the heat.
I like where this is going. Giggity, giggity, giggity.
The countdown starts now on 97.3 The Fan.
All right. Countdown today, courtesy of Chris Ello. Top five interesting things that happened in 1988 or that were going on in 1988. I don't know so much that this is like a top five list, like in order, but I think it is kind of curious, like five things that were going on in 1988. That was, of course, the last time the Dodgers won a World Series. Chris, I think it's only fair that you go first.
All right.
Number five.
It better be that I turn three.
You turned three?
I did. You better be on the list.
The fact that you were two was going to be on my list.
Okay, great.
No, number five thing, cheating began in earnest in 1988.
Ooh, good one.
Our first ever big cheating scandal. I don't want to say first ever in sports. There were some other situations before this, but I don't know if anybody remembers the 1988 Olympics 100-meter dash. Ben Johnson beating Carl Lewis with the then unbelievable time, and I don't know what his time was, but it was broke the record by several tenths of a second. People were just dumbfounded that anyone could possibly run that fast. He made the cover of Sports Illustrated, the whole thing, and then they found out he was using steroids. And they had to disqualify him, take away his gold medal. They gave the Carl Lewis ended up winning the gold medal on that one, part of his amazing Olympic career. But it seems to me that that's when a little bit that 1988 was kind of the year we grew up to realize that people are always trying to get an edge. And a lot of times they go over the line trying to get an edge. So I thought 1988 was a little bit of the line of demarcation in that regard when it came to cheating. And people haven't stopped since, by the way.
No, they've turned it up, actually.
Yeah, they've turned it up since then.
The other interesting thing about 1988, and my number five, is the Winter Olympics were also that year. You had February 13th through February 28th. And I'm a big fan of Cool Runnings. And it was inspired by the Jamaican bobsled team that made the 1988 Olympics. And that's number five on my list.
Senka, you're dead man. It's one of my favorite movies of all time.
Cool run.
Number four.
Do you know what the best picture was that year, or are you going to use that later?
No, you can use that one.
I'm not using it, but I'm just giving you a factoid. Rain Man was the best picture in 1988. All right, number four on my list, the Super Bowl came to San Diego in 1988 for the very first time. January 31st, 1988, Super Bowl 22. The Washington football team defeated the Denver Broncos 42-10. Doug Williams became the first African-American quarterback to lead his team to a Super Bowl. I don't know if you remember, Tony, one of the things that I remember about that, and this shows you where the world has gone since then till now. Do you remember what the most famous question asked of Doug Williams was leading up to that Super Bowl?
No, I don't.
Somebody asked him, how long have you been a black quarterback?
I'm sorry?
Yeah. Somebody actually asked him that question, and Doug Williams obviously did a triple take. Like, wait, what?
You know what's the sad part about that? I don't know, is that you can't even give them an excuse that they were trying to go viral. There was no viral at that point.
No.
That was just a straight-up dumb question.
That was just absolutely one. It's still, from 1988 to today, it holds up as one of the dumbest questions ever asked. Not only in a Super Bowl press conference, but in any press conference.
I would have just ran out of the room because I was so uncomfortable for after that question was asked. That would be awful to be a part of.
That was pretty whoever sad. Asked it should have ran out of the room.
That was amazing. By the way, San Diego ended up having three total Super Bowls before. I guess it'll be this month or next month that the old home for those Super Bowls will no longer be with us.
I was about to say they got three until their stadium could no longer qualify to be held to have another Super Bowl. They disqualified themselves basically.
Yeah.
Number four on my list is really about cost of living. You know, gas in particular.
Sure.
1 gallon of gas in 1988 went for a whopping 91 cents in 1988. Man, I wish I was driving in those days.
Can you imagine? I was driving in those days, and it seemed like it was really expensive back then.
I was about to say, it's all relative, right?
Yeah. You want to charge me what for my gas? 91 cents? Come on, now.
If only one of those tellers could have told you, do you know about 30 years from now, you'll be paying close to $4 per gallon?
I think I would have never believed.
Scrappy.
Number three.
That is honestly something I don't think I would have believed. Like, I knew, you know, there was inflation and prices would go up, but I never thought, like, a gallon of gas would be, like, $4.
Crazy, right?
All right, number three, factoid about 1988. After the Dodgers won their last World Series, I'm assuming Tommy Lasorda, the manager, got a phone call or a note of some sort from President Ronald Reagan. Mm. That's how far back you have to go to find a Dodger World Series championship. George H. Bush, H.W. Bush, never called the Dodgers. Bill Clinton never called the Dodgers. George W. Bush never had to call the Dodgers, nor did Barack Obama. We are now on our fifth president since the Dodgers last won a World Series.
Wowee.
And by the, well, I guess they'll get this World Series in before the election next week. So I was going to say we could be on to six.
All right, number three on my list. It's kind of fitting because in 2020, we're all about technology.
Yes.
And in 1988, an IBM PC with 30 megabytes.
30?
How many?
30.
30.
The hard disk would cost you about $1,249.
Oh, my goodness.
Yes.
For 30 megabytes.
For 30 megabytes.
My phone holds 128 gigs, and that's on the low end of phone storage.
Oh, my Lord.
Number two.
Okay, excuse me for being silly on it, but how much is your phone now? $1,000? Is it the same price, just a lot more
it's
megabytes?
It's cheaper. Your cell phone's cheaper and holds far more memory.
For sure. And computers
and it's pocket size, too,
yeah.
By the way. And you're not carrying around a whole desk with you.
That's what I wanted to find out. I wish you could go find somewhere on the website or somewhere. How much did a phone weigh in 1988 as opposed to now?
That's 88's even before the brick phone, isn't it?
Let me see.
That's way back there, man.
The Zach Morris phone.
Yeah, I think 88 might even be a little too early for the Zach Morris phone.
1983, it says.
Oh, well, I stand corrected. Hmm.
That thing
is ugly.
Some
of those phones were hilarious.
Yeah. Like, can you remember, Chris, people walking on the street talking on the phone thinking probably, oh, man,
they're
look
like
at this loser.
Yeah, I would look at the person like, what could possibly be so important that
exactly.
You have to be on the phone right now? Can it wait? Obviously not. All right, number two for me. The changing ways of Major League Baseball since 1988. In the 1988 season, Kirk Gibson was named the National League's most valuable player. Tony, he hit all of 25 home runs that year and drove in 76. That sounds about like the numbers they had this year in the shortened season. But that was good enough to win an MVP award. Why? Because only five players
in all of Major League Baseball hit 30 home runs or more. That's it.
Yeah.
Five guys. Nowadays, there's five on every team that hit 30 home runs. I should mention 1988 was a bit of a strange year for your dad.
I was about to say, I think he won the batting title that year with his lowest batting average.
313, the lowest in National League history, by the way. But did win another batting title that year in 1988. The Dodgers won the World Series that year, as we know. Gibson hit 25 home runs. Mike Marshall was second on the team that year with 20. And John Shelby was third with 10.
Hello, Shelby.
Can you imagine three guys, that's it, that had 10 home runs on a World Series winning team? But that's how it was in 1988.
If I'm not mistaken, I don't think my dad was an all-star that year. He hit
below
300 going into the
So they didn't even get him on the all-star team?
He wasn't Come even on, an all-star now. Year, I don't believe.
Come on, that should be an automatic.
This is number two, right?
Yeah.
Number two on my list, the U.S. Space Shuttle program resumes after 2.5 years. 2.5 years before that was when the Challenger exploded, and that disaster. And they kind of went on hiatus for about 2.5 years. 1988 was the first year they kind of got it back going again.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a shocking moment in time.
There's a great documentary on Netflix about it.
About the Challenger.
Yeah, it just came out like maybe a month and a half
ago.
Yeah,
I saw a promotion for that. I haven't seen it.
There's a massive conspiracy behind it. So
Of course there is.
We knew you were watching it for some reason.
Well,
It wouldn't be much of a documentary without one.
I started watching it for the education and information, but then it slowly morphed into my dreams, which is conspiracy theories.
My dreams, he said.
Number one.
All right, number one, and probably the number one main reason I even thought of this dumb topic in the first place. Not dumb. Sorry. It's a great topic.
Yeah, Jerry Jones.
It's a great topic because in 1988, I met my wife. Ah. That's how long ago it's been since the Dodgers have won the World Series. We met in the summer of 1988. There you have it. That's
Boom.
What got me thinking about this all in the first place. Happy anniversary, honey. Gobble, gobble.
Beautiful.
We just celebrated another anniversary.
Last week. You did.
Yes.
All right, number one on my list. It may not have been as good as the movie Rain Man, but it certainly was number one in my book, and that was the movie Beetlejuice. Watched it the other day.
Beetlejuice.
I loved the movie. Watched it the other day. It came on. Wife and I sat and watched. This is a good flick. Number one in my book in terms of the year 1988. That's why it sits at number one in my list.
You got it.
It's a scary movie as a kid. Oof.
It was.
Was it really?
Took me a long time to actually watch it from start to finish when I was younger.
I watched it by myself, I think. And it just freaked me out.
First mistake.
Yeah. Great movie, though.
Big Winona Ryder fans will recall that movie.
Oh, yes.
Indeed they would. Just some tidbits. Some of the more popular artists in 1988. U2, obviously, big one. Beach Boys were hot in 88. Michael Jackson, obviously. And Guns N' Roses. All very hot musicians in 1988.
Yeah. All right. Hopefully we'll be able to do that in another 32 years and the Dodgers still won't have won a World Series.
That would be music to a lot of our listeners' ears for sure.
Yes.
Oh.
I don't know if this is 88, but I just typed in Guns N' Roses. So.
A lot of people are reminiscing right now here in this part.
Oh, yeah.
Cosby Show was the number one television show in 1988.
Yes, it was. Yes,
things have changed a little since then for certain members of that program.
Just a little bit.
I saw a picture of said person that it changed for. He does not look good.
Well, I mean, he's in prison.
He's in prison and he's old.
Yeah, he's already older as it is. Around some sports, I just saw this pop up. Eric Reed was given an opportunity to be on the practice squad for Washington. He said, I'm good.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Didn't even want a piece of that.
decline. I mean, honestly, would you want to go to Washington right now? It just seems like there is a lot of turmoil there.
Yeah.
Even with Coach Ron Rivera, who seemingly is trying to get that ship back right. There's still a lot of baggage hanging over that organization still, though.
Eric Reed said, no, I'd rather play with the Jets. That really hurt the feelings of the Washington FT.
Oh, man.
Speaking of practice squad, didn't Antonio Bryant sign with the Ravens or something today?
Dez Bryant. Yeah.
I'm sorry, Antonio.
You mix,
Bryant.
Yeah.
Antonio
Bryant. I got
Brown.
My guys confused. Yes, I know. Antonio, yes, I know.
Yes, Dez Bryant did take the practice squad position. He tweeted about it. Actually, said he can't stop crying. He's excited after 2 years. Remember, he had signed with the Saints and was on gonna be playing with them and tore his Achilles in practice and had to miss all of last year because that happened towards the end of I believe it was 2018. So he's missed a couple years, but out after 2 years, he joins the Ravens practice squad, and that's a pretty cool story, man. You get to go out on your terms when it's all said and done on this one.
It's amazing, you know, the longer you play, how much it means to you, right?
Yeah.
You know, after if it's, especially if it's taken away from you at all, you definitely appreciate it a lot more. Dodgers changed pitchers in the second inning tonight, Tony. So it's going to be
it's going to be a long one, ladies and gentlemen.
Quite a long battle for the Dodgers. Dylan Floro came in to replace Gonsolin, who didn't make it past the second inning. And if a Rosarena hits another home run, then
I tell you what, I mean, it doesn't look like a big deal right now because Tampa's up, but they've squandered two chances in these first two innings.
Yes.
To get runs early.
Yes.
These things have a funny way of coming back to haunt you. We'll see if they can find a way to score those runs because you just don't want to lose these type of opportunities, especially this late in the series.
No, not against the Dodgers, man. The Dodgers are going to score.
Yeah.
You know that.
Yeah, shutting
Tampa
shutting
Bay
them out.
Has a lead on the first inning home run by a Rosarena, 1-0. All right, what do we have? A couple of minutes left here before the top of the hour. What happened in 1989? Tony, anything?
89.
I'm just kidding.
My brother was born.
I think my pops won another batting title on the last day against Will Clark, actually.
Oh, was that the year that he beat Will on the last day?
Yeah.
That was sweet, man. They were going head-to-head on that one, weren't they?
They were. They were going head-to-head. Them and the Giants were going head-to-head.
Right, they were playing each other.
They needed to. I think the Padres needed to sweep in order to win the division.
Oh, to catch them, yeah.
They ended up losing, I think, one of the first couple games, and then it just became a Tony Gwynn versus Will Clark batting title show. And they were literally going hit for hit through three games. Then my dad got the infield hit on his last at bat of that season to solidify the batting title. And that's what I remember from 88. 89, excuse me.
All right, what do you remember from 1990?
Let's just keep going down the line.
Yeah, we got a few years to go.
Well, hold that thought there, because we got to get the break and pay some bills. When we return, 6 o'clock hour, we may talk about 1990. We may not talk about 1991. No, but for real, we'll probably get into our game, getting to know us. This is Gwynn and Chris, San Diego's number one sports station, 97.3 The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.